Hello and welcome to Publish Me, a monthly podcast series from the AS21 Podcast Network, as we explore the publishing process of the fantasy epic, The Will of the Magi. I'm your host, Keith F. Shevlin, publisher of AS21 Media, and with me as always is...
Hello everyone, this is Paul Dickinson Russell, the author of The Will of the Magi. I hope you're all not melting like I have been in this intense and disgusting summer heat.
And I'm Ron Gaynor, design consultant and cover artist for The Will of the Magi, written by Paul Dickinson Russell. I live in a house with no air conditioning, so don't y'all talk to me about heat.
We're sorry.
Moderately.
Well, I'm definitely sorry. I mean, I'm enjoying my air conditioning right now, but then, of course, I've been out in the heat a lot lately, so.
True. I've been working my first summer ever indoors. So every summer before this, I've worked outside. So I'm enjoying the fact that this is the first summer where I've worked in air conditioning, and I am loving it.
Well, I took a nice sweltering walk through D.C. tonight, and last weekend I was in Nashville, which is even hotter than it is here in D.C. Oh,
so, why would you do that to yourself?
Some friend of mine decided to get married, so we were having a bachelor party in Nashville.
Your friend is awful. Your friend should just—you should just not be friends with this person anymore.
No, I'm kind of—I kind of don't want to cut his friendship. His brother can be a bit trouble, though.
I've heard horrible things about his brother. Just awful, awful things.
They're all listening right now.
Absolutely, they are. Yeah. I've heard things about that David character. He's just a very unsavory type.
Yes, for those not in on the inside joke here, that the wedding, it's a bachelor party for my good friend and our AS21 Chief Technology Officer, Joshua Silverman. He'll be getting married the beginning of August, and his brother, David, was there along with us for the trip. And of course, David is the one who introduced me and Paul in the first place. So there you go. The whole story of the podcast right there, full circle.
Ta-da!
One of these days, we do have to get David on here.
Absolutely. We'll just go out and kidnap him or something. It works.
No, I actually talked to him a bit about it this weekend, last weekend. He's up for it. We'll figure it out at some time.
Oh, perfect. That works.
So where are we right now in the publishing process of The Will of the Magi? I know I was talking to Corey. Your editing has been continuing. About what chapter are you guys on now?
I am sitting on 8 and 9 at the moment.
Okay.
So we are officially over, we're basically a fifth of the way done. Ooh. So we're, you know, this is going along quite well. I will say, working with Corey is a very nice and smooth process when it comes to this editing stuff. Mm-hmm. Having, you know, done minor stuff with people in college and at other points, just never to this kind of professional level. You know, Corey makes it a lot easier than it probably is for a lot of other people.
Yes, he does. He's a very smooth, somber person, so...
I have to ask, I don't mean to embarrass you, Paul, and we can cover over this part with elevator music if it's spoilery, but I remember reading the first part of the book, and I remember there was a phrase in there that went... The mountains were alive with life.
Yep.
I'm wondering what Corey has done with that.
I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Wait, it was in chapter 1. We did that last month.
I don't remember what chapter it was in. I don't remember what all happened in each individual chapter, but it was definitely within the first 15 somewhere.
Hang on. I don't remember mentioning mountains in chapter 1, but
yeah,
my memory is absolutely awful sometimes, so yeah. You know, I'm just gonna browse for that briefly and we'll see what in the world happens. But anyway, I might have to go back and re-edit some of the edits. I have no idea, because that is an exact phrase I would write, you know.
Oh, Paul.
This is why I have friends.
Yeah. Well, this is chapter 40 of the Publish Me podcast. This month we'll be discussing what was your first fantasy. Now, of course, your first fantasy novel, first fantasy series, first fantasy television series, movie, things of that. Not those other kind of fantasies. Well, trust me, that's not this podcast. Go check with what Eileen Vega's doing.
I was about to mention her. That's her work.
Yeah. And this is also July 2018. Now, this podcast is going out a little bit late because of the holiday, it just worked, you know, things got a little bit busy, and we didn't actually have a chance to sit down and record it till the 6th. And I know Zach is good. He's a good editor. But I don't expect him to have this thing completely edited and out until at the earliest, late night on the 7th. But Zach, prove me wrong. Zach, prove me wrong. And he'll probably edit all that out.
Who knows? He might just put it all in there to embarrass us.
And remember, you can find us on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, everywhere else you get your podcasts, and audio.as21.com. You can reach out to us on Facebook at facebook.com/publishpodcast, on Twitter at publishpodcast, or email publishpodcast@as21.com. So what has everyone been up to in the now departed month of June?
I'm making headway on that board game I'm supposed to be drawing. Going pretty well. I had a minor setback because I was sick for a week, but going well.
Good.
Nice. I've been working. I've been working on, you know, jobs and editing Magi, and that's basically been it. I've been boring for June.
I understand, though, you've been meeting privately with other AS21 creatives behind my back.
Yes, this is true. I did happen to find out that Thomas Reynolds happens to live about half an hour away from me. So, you know, I think I found him on LinkedIn. Mm. And I was like, ooh, someone from the same place I'm from. This is wonderful.
Yeah.
Sent him a connection request, and he's like, oh, you actually live really close to me. You want to meet up at some point? I was like, sure. So we met up, and, you know, it was a very entertaining time to finally meet, you know, in person someone from AOS21. And I did have a small bet going on with myself who is going to be the first person I was going to meet. None of the bets panned out. So, you know, I thought maybe it was going to be Keith first, Corey first, Rana first. I have no idea.
You've met Josh, right?
Josh Silverman?
Yeah.
Well, yes, but I met him before he worked for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not counting him having met him through David when me and David were in middle school and high school together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's a previous thing. I don't count that.
Okay.
So there's that.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
What have you been up to, Keith?
Oh, so many things. Well, we had Comic-Con, a 2-day Comic-Con back on June 9th and 10th up here at George Mason University, which was a very good time. We had Jim King come out for the first day, and it's really getting interesting to me going to Comic-Cons and being there with what is, in our company, original content. And I try not to judge those around us, but I'm seeing all these other tables doing great sales, selling stuff they do not have any rights to.
What do you mean?
Like fan art?
Yes.
Okay.
I have nothing against fan art, and if they're good enough, some of the artwork I saw is excellent, but it's just very interesting. We're sitting there trying to talk up the Hive series, or talking up Magnus and the Maiden, or, you know, any of the other books we might have that might interest anyone coming past, and we are the unknown quantity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because every once in a while, like, people will ask us, do you have any of this series? I'm like, well, no, we're not a bookstore, we're a publishing company, and it would be against everything we do to have fan art or something like that, like some of the stuff other people have.
Right.
So, like, meanwhile, the table next to us was selling canvases painted with different cartoon characters and such. And of course, I know that person doesn't have creative license to use any of that stuff, but he does it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they're doing... We did well with sales. This was by far our most successful Comic-Con and one of our most successful events, period. But it's just interesting seeing these others around us doing so well without actually having the rights to the work that they're profiting off of.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the reason I'm probably doing well is because it's familiar.
Right.
To people. Like, oh, I want more of the thing I already know that's good.
Oh, I understand it entirely. It just goes into the mental calculus of how I have to position AS21 and our titles. I mean, I was talking to a lot of people who had their own ideas for stories or the things, and for them, of course, I talk ePress21. Then finding people who were interested in sci-fi, then I've got to talk to them about the Hive series and why we're proud of it and what the kind of storytelling and everything that goes into it, and have Jim there to talk about it and talk about his inspirations and his background. And I mean, like I said, he did very well on sales that weekend. And in fact, we'll be putting out the bestseller this next week. We delayed because of the holiday, but Jim is the bestseller for June because of how well he did in sales at Comic-Con.
Nice.
Woo.
Nicely done.
I just noticing it a bit more this Comic-Con than previous ones. And people come to these things with only so much money to spend.
Mm-hmm.
We are competing with the known quantity, and I, knowing that we have to work within a certain construct of rights of what we can and can't use,
mm-hmm.
while these people operate in an entirely different thing. So,
I mean, I'm sure that there are people who go around to these things,
mm-hmm.
you know, agents for, let's say, Big Brother Comic, you know, for Marvel, DC. And I'm sure there's someone there who does that. And if these people get too big, they'll be like, you know.
Well, yeah, no, you're not going to San Diego with these people. Aren't right. going to San Diego because right. Marvel's there or right. DC's there. You're not going to New York. You're not going to Dragon Con. You're not even going to Awesome Con.
No. Which we can do.
Yeah. Like, Rana, your work is all original. I mean, it may be inspired by other things, but it's original work. You're not drawing Daffy Duck or SpongeBob or anything like that.
Well, here's the thing. I do some fan art on occasion. There's like a couple of pieces that I sell that are fan art just because I'm a fan of the thing and I draw the thing. But the way it works at most conventions is that they have a rule that your artwork has to be at least 50% original works and then 50% fan art. You can't just have all fan art. Like, that's how they sort of try to encourage people to do their own work,
mm.
their own original work, and I guess mitigate some of the copyright
issues.
For the most part, you know, tiny little illustrators like us on the internet, we're not going to draw the like giant Sauron eye of Marvel or Disney or whatever. If those companies did obviously say, you know, please cease and desist, I would have to.
Right.
But, you know, hey, I like this thing, so I drew fan art of this thing. You like this thing too? Please buy my thing.
Yeah.
No.
Well, this is something that actually came up in the news a lot, especially this past couple weeks, where the European Commission and the European Union was voting on a new copyright directive. And it passed the original official committee, but it failed when it came to the actual vote of the European legislature. I believe it was yesterday. I just saw, you know, July 5th that this came across. And what it meant would be that if you were to post something that you did not own the copyright to, it would give more ability for musicians or artists to be able to take things down. But it was worded in such a way, and there were a couple clauses that were targeted that would specifically go after people posting stuff to sites like Google or Facebook, wherein Google and Facebook would be charged a tax for anybody posting copyrighted material without permission of the copyright owner.
Wow.
What many in the industry thought that meant would mean the death of internet memes. Because if you took you know, a picture from a movie or a TV show or something, a cartoon, and then added text to it, who's the owner of that copyright? I mean, is that covered under copyright law, as in it being satire and therefore fair use? Well, then the person who posts it becomes the de facto copyright owner. And whether Facebook and Google would be willing to put up with that and just completely block memes from happening. And I feel like the way society is right now, if the memes are gone, society's just going to crumble.
This is true. Yeah, absolutely.
So the European Parliament voted down the change to copyright, which is bad for actual creators, in that, you know, this was going to be a tremendous win for especially musicians whose work was being pirated frequently.
Mm.
And some artists as well, and, you know, photographers. But it was a case of, it was a good reform that probably went just a little bit too far. I feel like with that, considering, plus my experience at the Comic-Con, just really, it's where my head has been at. In fact, I was trying to line up an interview with someone from the Copyright Office to talk about that, but I wasn't able to make that happen before it was time to record this episode. So maybe next month. It's actually a friend of mine, so hopefully I can make that happen. You know, just take her at lunch and record it, see how it goes.
That could be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since it's someone from the Office of Public Information at the Copyright Office, so that's literally her job. It's to talk about copyright. So I'm gonna try to line that up. I wasn't calling you out specifically, Rana, because I mean, I know you do create occasional fan art, but you also create fantastic original artwork.
Absolutely. The cover of my book.
Yeah. And I've seen, like, we've had you at both Gaithersburg and Kensington with us with your artwork on display, and people have been drawn to your original stuff so well. So,
a lot of artists, at least the way I see it in the artist alleys, at various times, so those who, like, a lot of artists will deliberately have a mix of, like, 50% fan art, 50% original work, because, like, the fan art draws people over, like, oh, I like this thing, and then they'll take a look at the artist's style and go, oh, I like your style, and then consider buying some original work. And then slowly, as the artist is able to, you know, build a name for themselves, they kind of are able to do more of what they actually want to do, if they don't want to do nothing but fan art. It's an interesting phenomenon to watch. These artists sort of navigate the conventional ecosystem and build a name for themselves. That's what I'm trying to do, too.
Right. Well, of course, we already announced that we will be at the next Comic-Con. They're coming back up here to George Mason again on January 21st for just a one-day con. And, of course, Rana, you'll be joining us for that one, so you'll get a chance to put your artwork out there.
Yay!
Woohoo!
Now, one thing that would be interesting is when we originally booked the con, they told us we'd have a 10-foot by 10-foot space, which is what we usually had when we were down in Richmond, except for the last time in Richmond, where we were at Virginia Commonwealth University, where they gave us much, much less space than we were used to, and everyone was kind of tight fit in. Well, apparently they got so popular with coming up to George Mason that they got way more exhibitors than they were expecting. And they were getting way more people coming than they're expecting, so they shrunk the amount of space down to 6x8 instead of 10x10. We no longer had the ability to kind of move tables around as much. Like, I was going to move the table to one side and have an inviting booth like what we do at Kensington and Gaithersburg. It just wasn't possible with how little space we ended up having. But what was nice was there was much smaller aisles to walk through, so it was much easier to engage with people. But then, of course, we had in the booth directly across from us was a realtor who just showed up first thing the Saturday morning, put down a tablecloth haphazardly, threw a couple pens and some business cards, and put up a poster that had way too many words on it saying, I'm here because I want to work with you, because I like stuff too. You know, obviously, not that word. And then that's all what their table was.
Yeah.
And I'm just like staring at it for 2 days, like, you fail. No one's even taking your pens. I'm running out of pens, and no one's taking any of yours.
you have done something right.
Yeah.
He, not so much.
Yeah. Well, so I took a picture of their table and I said, Comic-Con fail. How not the Comic-Con?
Yep.
And what's bad is I got distracted by someone behind me tearing down when they came and cleaned up their table. So I didn't even see them clean up. They just showed up Sunday evening after we closed and just swooped in, took all their stuff and walked away.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's sad.
Yeah. So otherwise, you know, busy with the usual AS21 stuff. We just had a literary game night at Walls of Books, which was a bit lightly attended. I guess the weather was just too nice for people to come out. Other than that, personally, I've been very busy because we just opened a new baseball exhibit at the Library of Congress, and I've been asked to be what's called a gallery ambassador. So I'm actually spending every day. I'm there for about 2 hours, and I was even there on July 4th. I did a four-hour shift on July 4th. In the baseball exhibit. I'm the guy that's there to answer questions, tell people how to, you know, where things are, make sure nobody's taking any flash photographs, make sure nobody's hitting the wall with a baseball bat, which actually happened.
Jesus.
Yeah. And, you know, all that kind of stuff. So on Friday, I figured I'd go a little bit more casual with it. So I actually went in wearing a baseball cap, and I took a pair of gloves and a baseball and was just, you know, tossing the ball and catching it and, you know, throwing it into the glove. And then when kids were around and there was enough space in the open area in the front, I tossed the other glove to a kid and we were just standing there playing catch in the middle of an exhibit at the library. So
I see nothing wrong with this.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, having good fun. My supervisor loved it. Absolutely loved it. And one curator came walking through and it just like watching it. It was like, wow. All right. We had enough space. We were throwing underhand. Kid was only 5 feet away from me. So, yeah, we weren't breaking anything.
No expensive statues or marble busts to break.
No, not in that room. All right. So I guess it's time to go into our discussion. So first we take this moment for a message from our sponsor. Hey, you listeners to the AS21 Podcast Network. You're eligible to get a free audiobook from Audible. Sign up today at audibletrial.com/AS21 and choose from 180,000 titles. You get your first month for free, and once you download that first audiobook, it is yours to keep forever. I'm currently reading Washington, A Life by Ron Chernow. And after that's done, I'm going to dive back into the Philip Pullman His Dark Materials series, as I believe I'm up to book 3 now. So really moving along through that one. Well, if you visit audibletrial.com/AS21 today, you get your first month of Audible for free and choose from any of 180,000 titles. There's so many good books out there to listen to. Many of them are read by the author themselves. So you get the unique input in the author's own voice. So you can listen to Yes, Please by Amy Poehler. And not only listen to Amy Poehler, but also listen to Seth Meyers, Patrick Stewart, and Kathleen Turner. Because, you know, they're awesome. So go to audibletrial.com/AS21. Get your first audiobook and join the audio revolution. All right, now continuing chapter 40 of the Publish Me podcast. What is your first fantasy? Now, originally this was supposed to be a question I was supposed to be asking people at Virginia Comic Con, but kind of issues with phone battery and other things made it difficult. I was also supposed to be recording people with their cosplay, but that didn't work out either. So instead, this is just going to be a discussion among the three of us. That way, this is a little bit shorter of an episode, not a lengthy thing. I know it's already well over 20 minutes, so yeah.
That's short for us. It's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Now, Paul, this is something you actually discussed recently with Corey.
Yeah, so Corey sent me a list from Unbound Worlds, the 100 best fantasy novels of all time. Dun 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 dun
dun dun.
And you know, I think I see a different one of these lists every 2 or 3 weeks. So this is the latest one I've seen. Most of them are only like top 25, top 50, whatever. So I have 100. It's pretty good. I will say, out of these 100 books, I have actively read 22 of them.
Wow.
I own, but they're in my to-be-read pile of 7 of them, which leaves 71 that I haven't heard of. So I'm like, ooh, I have more books to buy. So that works. There's a lot of fun books here. Obviously, some classics are up here. The Hobbit, Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan, American Gods by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, I just brought it up at UnboundWorlds.com. Number one, Akata Witch.
Yeah.
By Nnedi Okorafor.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
I've heard of it.
It looks good, so I'm looking forward to it.
It's dubbed the Nigerian Harry Potter.
Yep.
A YA crossover novel of a Nigerian-American girl with albino skin and a deep well of magical talent. It's an absolutely stunning read, a gem in an overcrowded subgenre. I see Lewis Carroll here, American Gods, Jonathan Stroud.
Assassin's Apprentice by Robin Hobb.
Yeah.
It has, you know, The Belgariad by David Eddings, who I definitely enjoy. Glenn Cook's The Black Company. You know, all these things are quite excellent fantasy in my view. And then, you know, again, like some I've heard of that I just haven't had the chance to read yet.
Right. I'm at 25 going through the list right now, and I'm up to 25 and I've only read one. So,
whoa.
Yeah, I got some reading to do.
Yeah. I mean, and it's what's nice is like it's not just like brand new fantasy, because that's one thing I do notice about these lists. They only have like the latest fantasy. It's only been out for a couple years. So, like, number 28 is Dragonflight by Anne McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good. You also have number 29, Dragons of Autumn Twilight from the Dragonlance Chronicles. So, again, that's not recent fantasy. This, you know, this is all good.
Well, yeah.
Classic
39,
fantasy.
The Golden Compass by Philip Pullman. Just read a few weeks ago. So
yep.
That makes two.
I like, and there's also ones that, like, I've read, but I'm like, you're really putting that up there? Okay.
I would think of Interview with a Vampire as a fantasy novel, but okay.
That, you know, they also have things like that. Like, I know some people view that one more as contemporary, not exactly fantasy, but, you know, there is that. I mean, I think one of my favorite ones they have up here is The Bloody Crown of Conan by Robert E. Howard, so we have Conan the Barbarian, you know, one of the foundations of fantasy,
mm-hmm.
depending on who you ask.
Let's see, I'm 75 through and I've only read 6 so far. So, yeah.
Oh, like, I'm literally, like, trying to think of all the books that I've read.
The 100 life. Best Fantasy Novels of All Time on Unbound Worlds. It was published May 21st.
Yep.
Okay, there's Princess Bride, so there's, okay.
Yep.
That's 7. That was a good book. That was a better book than I thought it would be.
Yeah. I mean, and again, they also have, like, The Once and Future King by T.H. White. Yeah, so again, it's...
That's one I really need to get on my list next. Yeah, I only saw one Terry Pratchett.
One of the ones that I enjoyed seeing on the list was Prince of Thorns by Mark Lawrence. That I enjoyed, because that's a very grim, dark style of fantasy, which... It has been making a lot of headway recently from what I've been seeing. But they also have, again, like Redemption and Indigo by Karen Lord. We have a very good selection of non-European, non-Anglo-Saxon based.
Oh, Watership Down. Oh, beautiful book.
There you go.
That's number 97? That's it's a gorgeous book. So I've been through, I've gone through all 100 and I've read 9 of them.
We gotta work on that, sir.
Well, what's one thing they do is, yeah, they only have one book from a series. Yeah, they have Fellowship of the Ring and The Hobbit,
right?
But they only have Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe from the Chronicles of Narnia. I've read all of those. They only have A Wizard of Earthsea from Earthsea series. I've read all of those. They only have Golden Compass. I've read 3 of those books now. Because I read Golden Compass, Subtle Knife, and one of the half, the prequel books.
Okay.
And Outlander, I've read with my wife, I think it said 7 books now. I've read 3 or 4 of them with her because listening to them as audiobooks in the car. Magicians, they only had the first Magicians book. I've read that whole trilogy.
Right.
Like, Anne Rice has 7, I mean, if you're going to count Interview with a Vampire as a fantasy, she's gotten how many books that she's written? The Vampire Chronicles and such? And the
absolutely.
The Tales of Lestat?
I mean, and then, you know, again, they, like I always mention, they have The Eye of the World here, and that's 14 books.
Well, if you're going to count Interview with a Vampire as fantasy, there is a book missing from this list that I read a long time ago.
Which one?
Where is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein?
Well, that always falls in horror, but that's a good point.
So, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, I think, has undergone some genre redefinitions. Like, back in the day, science fiction was not a thing.
Right.
So, it technically counted it as horror, and it still technically is. But, like, now I think most people put it in science fiction.
Absolutely. Well, I actually don't see it in science fiction or fantasy. I see it in the classics.
Well, yeah, which obviously it's a classic, but some of these on here are classics as well.
True. But I think a lot of people view that as like a whole subcategory. Okay. Like you have your horror, but then this is, you know, classics. It just happens to be a horror story, but it's a classic.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, that's how I think some people view it.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk fantasy classics, then you're talking like L'Amour d'Arthur.
True.
And, you know, the classic tales of the Knights of the Round Table and Robin Hood and all of that.
Right.
And let's clearly delineate here. We're talking fantasy, not science fiction. Those,
right.
Really, it's kind of a travesty to put those two together.
Absolutely.
Because there are so many differences. Science fiction, fantasy purely can exist in imagination. Science fiction, you've got to build it off of some sort of base. I mean, whether you're reading Arthur C. Clarke or Aldous Huxley or any of them, they all started with some sort of scientific base. In fact, heck, Aldous Huxley is a biologist. And you would not confuse Brave New World with Earthsea.
Are you sure about that? Because I'm sure we could find someone who could.
You shouldn't confuse it.
See, there you go.
I know.
There are people who think the Earth is flat.
Oh, I know.
Here's my question. Where does steampunk fall in that spectrum?
Oh.
Steampunk is its own area. That's a thing. Oh, and I love steampunk debate. If I hear people discussing and arguing steampunk, I am the Michael Jackson GIF, whatever you pronounce it, of eating popcorn, whatever. I just watch those debates because I've seen people who are like, if it's not taking place in the Victorian English era style story, it's not steampunk. And I've seen some fantastic Wild Wild West style steampunk. I've seen samurai, ancient Japanese based steampunk. I have seen sub-Saharan African based steampunk that are quite fantastic. But based upon certain groups' definitions of steampunk, those aren't steampunk. And I'm like, those are steampunk. You're idiots. But anyway, everyone has their own opinion, and they're entitled to be wrong.
Yes. I can understand certain bookstores, you only have so much shelf space, so you'll mix genres. Like, some can get away with just having two, fiction and nonfiction.
Those are the boring people.
Yes. Libraries can't even get by with just doing that anymore. Steampunk definitely is its own thing. You can make the argument that it's science fiction, you can make the argument that it's fantasy. This kind of stretches to, like, movies, because I consider, now that I'm older, I consider Star Wars to be more fantasy than science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, jeez.
Now,
here's my question.
Okay.
Star Wars is more fantasy.
Yes.
Star Trek is more science fiction?
Absolutely.
Okay. I can hear and feel the hatred and anger and angst coming out of the future of us posting this podcast for that statement. I can feel it bubbling in the future cosmos of the ether.
I sense much fear in me. It's quite, being a lifelong fan of both.
Mm-hmm.
I was born right in the middle of all that. Empire Strikes Back came out just before I was born, Return of the Jedi after. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I ever saw Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, was at a drive-in. I grew up with all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who has grown up soaking all of this in and adding in your healthy doses of other things such as Doctor Who and Babylon 5 and Battlestar Galactica and so on and so forth, you can very clearly see the delineation. Let's take a concept and build it on some sort of fact. Or let's have space wizards with laser swords.
I'm trying to do a really nerdy impression right now with the whole basically voice to talk about quantum force mechanics, but I really don't want to do it this late at night.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying that you cannot watch Star Wars with an actual eye to any sort of scientific accuracy. And they found a way to explain how the Kessel Run can be done in less than 12 parsecs, which is cute. I mean, I enjoyed Solo, but it's a case of George Lucas messed up, so he had to cover his ass.
Well, I mean, that's his, you know, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, but I mean, it still comes down to, yes, ESP is a real thing, but I mean, laser swords still don't quite make sense, and yeah.
Laser swords based on something that goes off infinitely.
Yes. Well, and just the whole idea of, I have seen many people who actually are trained in sword fighting going, I could easily win any fight with a lightsaber. What you do is you fight, you parry, you thrust. As soon as you are about to hit, you turn it off. And the second the other's lightsaber goes past, you turn it back on and you kill the guy.
Right. Why would I'm trying to think about why that was never done, because that would make hilarious video footage.
Yeah. Well, just see what happened in the most recent, in The Last Jedi, where Rey threw her lightsaber across and Kylo Ren caught it. Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen a movie that came out 7 months ago and has grown the enmity of the internet.
That's the limitation on spoilers. It's 5 years.
Oh, okay. Well, still, spoiler alert. Rey throws a lightsaber. Kylo Ren catches it and turns it on as soon as he catches it, so it goes through the head of the Red Guard that's got him caught up.
Right.
The people who are like, yeah, when you we're riding with swords, the sword cannot retract, so you have to clash swords. But when you have a lightsaber that can retract, why would you ever actually clash lightsabers?
Mm-hmm.
But once again, the physics of lightsabers don't make sense. And then, of course, you see what happens when you have someone who's a devoted Star Wars fan take over Star Trek. And that's what happened with the most recent movies, and that's how you get a thing like Red Matter, which makes no sense whatsoever.
Oh, let's not go into that.
Yeah, we're not. We have gone too far down that rabbit hole already. And we have gone way away from our actual stated goal here, which is, what is your first fan?
So I'll answer that question. Damn
okay.
It. All right. So I would say, in terms of overall fantasies, this is going to go overall fantasy, which has to, because the first one has to be beyond book, beyond literature form, is the movie Flight of Dragons,
okay,
which I think I probably saw when I was like 2 or 3 or 4, which I currently own in VHS form, DVD form, but I also do own it on my Amazon Prime account. So obsessive with that one particular fantasy is absolutely true. In terms of book fantasy, I would have to say books from the Dragonlance Chronicles. I have so many of them, I still can't remember which one I read first. I have an idea, but there's that. There's also The Seer King, which was a good one, which is another first one. Obviously Tolkien, but I would say Flight of Dragons is the very first fantasy I ever saw, probably, and still one of my absolute favorites.
All right, how about you, Rana?
Ever since you told me what the theme of this episode was, I've been like trying to rack my brain. I definitely remember the first time I heard about Harry Potter. I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I actually went to a British school. I was a kid living in Turkey, and I went to a British embassy study group, and my best friend was British, and she told me about this book, and she was just like, so they're fighting this bad guy, and his name is Voldemort, and she like put her hand over her face, and I was like, what is his name? I don't get it. And then I read the book, and I was like, oh. I actually read the Historic Materials series when I was 10 or 11, which is really not the age to be reading those books.
No. Oh, poor child.
But I actually remember reading the third one first, because I didn't realize it was part of a series, and I was just so confused. But I was really intrigued by it, so I read the rest of them. And then, of course, in high school, I was an insufferable nerd, so I read the original Alice in Wonderland, like, cover to cover, 6 times. And I have both copies of the annotated Alice in Wonderland on my bookshelf right now. There's multiple copies. And I said, I'm going to get annotated copies of all the classic fairy tales. So I've got annotated Wizard of Oz and Peter Pan and annotated Mother Goose. Like,
ooh.
Really?
Nice.
So it's like the DVD extras, but in book form. It's fun. You guys are talking about steampunk. And I remember in high school, I read this series of books by Sherry Priest the first one was called Bone Shaker, and all the rest of them were like spin-offs that took place in that universe with related characters. And it was a really cool steampunk horror type thing. There were zombies in it, because obviously, but they didn't have zombies. And it was a lot of fun. And I'm, of course, obsessed with Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. I've read like 45 Discworld books, so still making my way up that list. That's a brief history of my reading, taste in reading.
See, I've been racking my brain on this too, and I'm thinking, like, I obviously come up, you know, Wizard of Oz, Peter Pan, the works of Roald Dahl, and I start to think of like the Boxcar Children, but that's not really fantasy. Knights of the Round Table. And just all of that kind of stuff is what kind of the Canterbury Tales. I'm looking at my shelf right now, and I'm seeing some fantasy books just sitting here next to me. Utopia by Thomas More, The Canterbury Tales by Chaucer, The Bible.
Now we're going to get hurt. You thought pissing off the Star Wars and Star Trek fans were bad. Those Bible fans are even worse.
I mean, I've always tried to have a healthy background in reading fantasy. I mean, I've read the entire Chronicles of Narnia to my kids. I've read the Magician's Trilogy with my wife. I've picked up stuff here and there. And fantasy has always interested me because of the fact how you are free. I mean, as we've talked about frequently on this podcast and this whole time, how you are, if you are a fantasy writer, you are free to write whatever you want. The people don't need to be human. They don't need to have one head. They can have two heads or three. It's all up to you.
Well, you can write people that don't have a brain, but, you know, we're living in that world right now, so...
Oh, anyway.
Yeah. I get it. Yay, jokes.
Yeah, we're just ticking off all the boxes, offending everybody. Yep. Yeah.
Get people to listen.
Yeah.
Hate listens are still listens. Hate views are still views. It works.
Yeah. All right. Seeing by the fact that the battery icon on my computer is starting to yell at me, I think it is time that we start to wrap it up. But yeah, there is a lot out there. And of course, yeah, like sticking to pure fantasy, there's classical fantasy and there's fantasy. There's stuff that mixes in horror, stuff that mixes in science fiction, steampunk. There's subgenres upon subgenres. There's, you know, medieval-based fantasy. There's a different world. The key to it is imagination. It's studying, like, Thomas Jefferson, I could do at the library. He divided his library into three sections: memory, reason, and imagination. And that's amazing to think about imagination, whether it's also reclassified as fine arts, which not quite the same thing. But for fantasy, everything about it is imagination. The names can be imaginative. Everything about it just all can be different. In fact, when it does seem like you're describing human beings in a world that pretty much is Earth, it almost seems like it's not as imaginative as it could be. But it's all key to what your story that you want to tell and what great stories have been told so far.
Exactly.
So check out the list of the 100 best fantasy novels of all time from Unbound Worlds. It came out in May. Interesting thing to check out. And then, of course, be on the lookout as we get ready to release the Will of the Magi later this year. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
It better be out this year.
Yeah. Serious. Okay, so what do we got coming up for the rest of July? Rana, you got anything?
I'm tabling at BlurredCon at some point at the end of the month. So I'm preparing myself for that. Still working on the board game. Got some work cut out for me.
How about you, Paul?
I'm working on editing Magi still. I'm going to be working on one or two other my writing projects. Just going to see which of those holds my interest for a little bit longer and see how those things take off. And then we'll see what happens by July's end.
Well, we are now working on the fifth and final AS21 annual. We opened up submissions to past contributors as of the beginning of July. So we're starting to get those in, whether they be... So far, I think we've gotten some submissions of poetry, and some people contacted us about submitting artwork. So we're starting to put that together. That'll be out in October. Full submissions open August 1st. So next time you'll listen to us, submissions will be open for the 2018 AS21 annual. It will be at this time an electronic release. That way we can have audio and video as part of it. And of course, any artwork that would appear in electronic, it will be in full color. So be sure to visit as21.com/annual so you could submit your work. It is a free submission. And if you can submit up to 3 items for consideration. And both Paul and Rana have appeared in last previous issues. Rana's artwork was even on the cover of last year's edition. So check that out. Other than that, for AS21, we have Poetry Open Mic at Walls of Books on July 20th. That's the third Friday of the month. And then we'll have Literary Game Night at First Friday at Walls of Books on August 4th. I'm not going to be there because that's the weekend of our Chief Technology Officer getting married, so be at the wedding with a few other AS21 staff members, actually. So
there you go. Good job, Josh.
Yeah, and I'll actually be in your neck of the woods, Paul, so it's possible we might actually meet.
I have a wedding to crash, apparently.
No, well, we have to drive through New Jersey to get there and get back, so we could conceivably find a way to happen upon lunch.
Happen upon some roadside diner.
Yes, because Sunday we're sticking around for brunch and then we're driving back, so we could perhaps meet. Of course, hopefully by that time we have already recorded the podcast before I go on this trip.
That would be a good idea.
Yes. And as to what that podcast might be, I don't know yet. We'll find out. I've got a couple different people. There was possibility of us doing a crossover with another podcast by a local publishing company, but the host of that podcast just got married last week, so she's a bit busy right now.
I hope so.
Yes. Oh, that's not going on.
Yes. That is, again, not this podcast, but another one of our
podcasts. For that, check out Two Girls, One Joint, appearing on the last Wednesday of every month, starring AS21 creative Eileen Vega, the modern whore, and Drew Syllabus. All right, so this has been Chapter 40 of the Publishing Podcast, What's Your First Fantasy? Find us on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, and audio.as21.com. Reach out to us at Facebook, facebook.com/publishpodcast, on Twitter at publishpodcast, or email publishpodcast@aois21.com. For AS21 Media, I am Keith F. Shovlin.
I'm Ron Gaynor.
And as always, I am Paul Dickinson Russell. Remember, where there are thoughts and ideas, there are stories. See you next month.
Copyright 2018, AS21 Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
AS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?